Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's for 11 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is August 23rd. I thought we'd kick off with Brazil. The Bovespa was up 2,300 points in here today, but more importantly, bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average. And this is looking like a more sustainable recovery. And most particularly, let's just look at this in US dollar terms, just to put into perspective how strong this rally has been from the lower side of the range. So we're back above both the midpoint of this range that's been forming for the last year and a half, and both of the trend means. Now, of course, a trend smoothing device is most useful in a trending market, and the range has been going on for a year and a half, so they're not especially useful. But certainly, we're starting to see more enthusiasm for Brazilian stocks. Now, a good part of the reason for that is because of commodity prices. Oil, natural gas, soybeans are all at historically high levels. But then on top of that, we have the very real phenomenon of the prospect of positive real interest rates in Brazil. So if we look at just where rates are right now, if just simply looking at swaps, you're getting double digits. And the overnight rate is at 13.65%. So we're talking about a very significant interest rate hike that's been going on now for just about all year. And the Brazilian real has held up better than most currencies against the US dollar by virtue of that high interest rate. And it was in positive territory in here today. So the Brazilian real has held a sequence of higher reaction lows since March of 2020. Now, Brazil has had its own issues with inflation, just like everywhere else. But the Bank of Brazil has done an admirable job of hiking rates in the face of very clear and vociferous political dissent to that decision. But they've done it anyway. And now they're talking about interest rates, or at least inflation, peaking, and an average inflation rate for the year of somewhere in the region of about 6.5%. And of course, that overnight rate is at 13%. So there is significant room for the Brazilian economy to prosper here because they can start cutting interest rates. When you've got interest rates at 13%, it kills off demand for credit. And that was something that really weighed on some of the Brazilian banks. So they're not going to find many people who want to borrow when interest rates are that high. But it's also, Unibanco has had a sequence of higher reaction lows since 2020, and it's looking almost exactly like the currency. Then, if we look at the fintech sector, you've got PagSeguro, and this is a rather interesting fintech play. So the share came down from 60 to 10 as interest rates were hiked, and it's consumer credit that really got hit by higher interest rates and slowing economy and lower living standards and the withdrawal of liquidity to just about everything. But that was a big upward dynamic we saw 4 weeks ago, and it's holding the 10 level. And if interest rates start to come back down and consumer credit demand starts to be revitalized, well, then those fintech type companies are probably going to do okay and might even get back to where they were in 2021, which is an awfully long way from where they are right now. But what that also helps to highlight is that if central banks are willing to do what's necessary to kill demand, then they can get inflation under control. So then the big question is, what are other central banks going to do? We continue to see that the 10-year yield is pushing higher and in US Treasuries. So it's above 3% in here today. This has been an emphatic rebound from the region of the 200-day moving average. We're still right in the region of the upper side of this range that's been forming for a decade. And we would have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside in the absence of a very clear downward dynamic. So interest rates, or the outlook for interest rates, looks like we're certainly going higher from here. And when we then look at the yield curve spread, well, it rebounded somewhat last week and then rebounded again in here today. So now it's negative 25. And this is starting to recover. One thing that we can often see is that when we have an inverted yield curve, that is implying that liquidity conditions are going to get tighter. They get tighter into the face of inflation, and that's usually welcomed by stock market investors. Now, the 3 month is at 2.66%. So we don't yet have an inverted yield curve at the very short end of the curve versus the long end of the curve. But the bigger point here is that if this spread starts pushing higher from here, well, that's not pricing in tighter liquidity. That's pricing in easier liquidity, but usually in response to sharply lower inflation and growth in the economy. In other words, it would be in response to clear evidence of recessions. So then let's just think about that. What would that would mean in terms of earnings? The S&P 500 is right in the region of the 200-day moving average, and it was in negative territory again in here today. So continuing to extend its pullback. And then let's think about Apple. Apple's had plenty of occasions where it's pulled back between 20 and 30%. It's very overbought in the short term, and the replacement cycle is not in favor of additional upside right now. So there's clear scope for additional unwinding of this short-term overbought condition. Investors are continuing to look at what the outlook is for inflation and central bank action as a result of or at least leading into the Jackson Hole speech by Jay Powell on Friday. But fail to think, or fail to understand why people think that this is going to be the major pivot point. Oil prices are back above $100. That was a very meaningful rebound from the intraday low yesterday. And Saudi Arabia is beginning to target prices. So they're talking about $100 price yesterday, and voila, here we have $100 closing out the day today. We had a spike in prices back in March. The USA started releasing supply from the Strategic Reserve in March. They've brought the levels back down to lows that haven't been seen since 1985, and sold about half of the reserve. So that release is going to end in October, which is going to subsequently give a lot more control over the oil market back to OPEC. And Saudi Arabia and OPEC in general are more than happy to have higher prices. They're sellers, and show me any seller in the world who's happier with lower prices. So I think this is obviously then a potential support for the market. We have, I think, two very different contributors to inflation. The first was massive money printing. The second is lack of investment in additional supply of the key energy commodities. We often hear about the supply bottlenecks and less about the surge in demand. But China's exports massively jumped in 2020 and 2021. That was a direct response to demand. Now, the fact that lots of suppliers were not able to keep up with demand and they had their ability to increase supply impinged by the lack of new workers and the inability to get people to come back to work, having fired them in the first place. All of that contributed to inflation, but the root cause of the inflation was the massive amount of money printing. So it stands to reason that significant pain and withdrawal of liquidity is going to be required to bring people back into the workforce. So that's one source of inflation that central banks have at least some control over. Now, the other thing that we hear lots about is that why should there be a recession? Why should there be any real decline in growth? Because oil's not nearly as important to the global economy today as it was back in the 1970s. And there is some weight to that argument, but one thing is that it's an emotional response by people that they feel like they're getting robbed when the price of something they buy every week is jumping in price. But then there's the other side of that equation, and it's natural gas. Because the intensity with which natural gas is used in the global economy has increased since the 1970s. And prices right now are testing the $10 area in the USA, but that's not where the supply problem is. We've had indiscriminate buying of natural gas in Europe as a panicky response to the very real threat that Russia is going to cut off supply entirely. So they don't have much choice. They had to go in and buy and be completely indiscriminate in what price they paid. And of course, it starkly highlights how reliant the world is on natural gas for the industrial sector, for utilities, and then also for fertilizers. And if it's almost insult to injury that we have some of the biggest droughts in history in Europe right now. So that's also hitting agricultural production and hitting the production of energy from hydroelectric dams. Mosaic and Nutrien are both rebounding from the most recent tests of their higher reaction lows. So they're certainly pricing in increasing demand for fertilizer because agricultural prices are starting to recover. So soybeans, having pulled back really quite sharply, has steadied and is holding above the base formation put in between 2014 and 2020. Wheat prices came back in a violent manner following exports from Ukraine starting up again, but they are now steadying. So it also looks like here we're going to see the breakout from the base formation sustained. And that's likely to continue to influence inflationary pressures. Some of the keenest inflation pressures are still in the food sector. So the pullback that we saw in food prices has not translated into retail prices, but one can be absolutely certain that the rebound we see in agricultural prices will show up in food prices. So that's certainly something to pay attention to. And it pretty much ties the hands of central banks. They're going to have to raise interest rates to try and bring down demand. And that's the one thing they have control over. Now, politicians, on the other hand, have more control over energy prices because they could institute supply constraint. They could institute price controls. That would be one thing. They could also force producers to produce more. And of course, that would entail significant investments. They could also force companies to reinvest all of their profits in additional new supply. So there's obviously things that can be done. It's really only a question of political will to do so, and then a willingness to face down various lobby groups. Obviously, the fossil fuel sector isn't exactly popular in the global economy today. But when we're looking at the real possibility of significant living standard contractions in response to, I think, inevitable recessions, then the willingness of governments to take action will, I think, improve, although we don't see really any evidence of it just yet. Now, when we think about currencies, the USA looks likely to continue to support the dollar by raising interest rates. But the dollar paused today in the region of its peak from back in July. Now we have this almost lockstep reaction with gold. Whenever the dollar pauses, gold rebounds. So it was up $10 in here today. If the dollar index breaks on the upside, then it's going to take gold down another leg. The euro is right in the region of parity, and there's a lot of negativity being expressed about it. But then let's just think about where the short end of the curve is in Europe. So 6 month yields are still negative, even though we've had a substantial rebound from deeply negative. We're still seeing these yields coming down right now. So there's some speculation the ECB is going to surprise on the upside with higher interest rates, and that would help to support the currency. If the euro rallies and the dollar comes down, then it could act as a higher reaction low catalyst for gold. But we're not there yet, and the 6 month yield doesn't suggest that the ECB is going to aggressively hike rates. So it's certainly potential. And Europe is in an exceptionally difficult situation where they have massive inflation on the energy front and significant cuts to the ability of consumers to spend. And huge increases in electricity costs. So, raising interest rates into a recession is obviously not an optimal scenario, but they may have to do something in order to try and curtail some of the demand that there is still in the economies. Now, let's also pay attention to what's going on in the UK. And the pound is back below 120, but it was also in mildly positive territory in here today. The willingness of the Bank of England to raise interest rates and then to curtail speculative interest in the property sector is obviously then going to be one of the big arbiters of whether the pound, in fact, can hold support in this area. If they fail to raise interest rates in an aggressive manner, then the pressure release will be in the pound. And this is almost, it's not quite the same as a parallel with China. Now, the renminbi was a little bit steadier in here today, but it hasn't pulled back below the 6.8 level. And China cannot support the property market and also support the currency. They're going to have to pick one or the other. So today, at least, it was the currency, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be the same tomorrow. Then the Indian market has rebounded emphatically and is now looking likely that it's going to unwind its short-term overbought condition. But it bounced today from the region of the 200-day moving average, and the rupee has at least paused. Now it's still a downtrend for the rupee overall, and we're back in the region of the lows. If the rupee continues to trend downwards, then in currency adjusted terms, the Nifty isn't going to be able to hold up. But at least in local currency terms, it is getting some support from the devaluation of the currency. As we look around the world, there's the real threat of a global recession. And that would then put downward pressure on some of the commodity-led inflation. But OPEC is back in control as soon as the Biden administration runs out of oil to sell. So that's going to help to support prices for longer and then put greater pressure on demand. Oil and gas are a tax on consumption. The higher prices are, the greater the potential is that we're going to see significant downward pressure on economic activity. So into that environment, stocks remain under pressure. But we're definitely seeing some of the commodity-related currencies steadying up. So the Brazilian real has steadied, but so has the Australian dollar. And it was unchanged in here today, but it is looking likely that we might have a higher reaction low here. And the ASX 200 is still pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average. There's obviously the threat that interest rates are going to continue to rise and that bond yields are still pushing higher. So this commonality we have with bonds everywhere is, well, I guess everywhere except China, where bond yields have been coming down. And that's more to do with the real threat of deflationary forces rather than anything else. So it's quite possible that it's China where we'll have the first recession and we'll have other recessions elsewhere. I think the only real question is how global is this recession going to be? Because we have exactly the same kinds of conditions that we had in 2006 and 7, where we have tighter monetary conditions, we have somewhat tighter fiscal conditions, and we have commodity price inflation that's historic in nature. And that's not a recipe for strong equity markets. So I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.